Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Weathering the storms of adolescence can be challenging for mothers and daughters. It can also be what brings them closer. Today, we're revisiting a conversation about building our nation's daughters, Bond. The nonprofit aims to strengthen the relationship between mothers and daughters through communication, fun, and learning. Atira Griffin is founder and CEO of Bond. She's also a new member of the city's Board of School Commissioners. In appointing her 10 days ago, Mayor Brandon Scott cited her, quote, fierce advocacy for young people and her cross-sector experience, close quote. Part of that experience is her work with Bond, which earned her a slot as one of this year's 12 Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellows. Each fellow is receiving $60,000 over 18 months to support a project designed to improve life in the city's underserved neighborhoods. As we began our conversation, I asked Griffin how Bond works.
So Bond works through a two-generation mentoring model. We work with single mothers in Baltimore City and their daughters, specifically in school cohorts, to support them using restorative circle practice and STEAM activities and exercises in developing positive relationships through communication, health and wellness activities as well. And then we also work on economic mobility and educational achievement, both for mom and daughter at the same time.
Bond is particularly focused on supporting single mothers. What extra pressures are single moms under?
Absolutely. So single moms are the head of household. They are the breadwinners. They are the leaders of their household. And, you know, not having an extra income or an extra adult sometimes to support in a house means that everything falls on your shoulders. So we see a lot of the stress that comes from running a household. It's double on a single mom. Also, the pressure to make sure that their family is provided for is double on a single mom. And we work to help alleviate that by being a part of their community and providing a broader community of support for them within Bond.
How many mothers and daughters are part of Bond?
Right now, we have 75 moms and daughters a part of Bond through our school cohorts, and that means their memberships through specific schools we work with, including Booker T. Washington, Lily Mae Carroll Jackson Charter School, and the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. And then outside of that, we also have what we call citywide programming, which really allows moms and daughters, single moms and daughters, to participate in our programs, whether they are members from a school or not. And they're still able to access our activities, our sessions, and then also some of our information that we have online for them too.
And how old are the girls in the program?
Absolutely. So the girls are in grades 5 through 12, which means they range in age anywhere from 11 all the way up to 18, which is a broad swath. But we've seen that this model works, and sometimes we do split up our cohort circles to allow some of the older girls to express their concerns with their mom, which may be very different from, say, a middle school girl.
Yeah, I can imagine that there are times when that conversation needs to be adjusted. Listeners may remember that we spoke with you, your mother, and a mother and daughter from Bond back in January. How has Bond adapted to the pandemic?
So the pandemic really did change the way that we operate. We were used to meeting in person with our moms and daughters in circle at the schools, and so we had to go virtual. So Bond is now on Zoom, just as much as everyone else out there listening. We are on Zoom as well, meeting with our moms and daughters once a week now, instead of just twice a month, which is what we did before. And so our moms and daughters receive more programming because of COVID, because one, a lot of our moms are actually frontline workers. They work in hospitals. They work within the medical system in different capacities, and they need that extra support. And two, because we have noticed that our girls are just lacking that social time and they really want to be able to connect with their peers, and Bond provides that opportunity for them. So to help support our moms and daughters, we ramped up our programming to meet once a week now via Zoom, still for 2 hours, and we still create that magical space of circle with them.
Tell me more about what you're hearing from your mothers and daughters about the impact the pandemic is having on them.
So when we first started discussing it, at first it was definitely the isolation, the inability to get out and see loved ones, family members, be outside for the girls and play and just talk and be children. And then for the moms, it was this anxiety, honestly, around whether or not their position would be impacted because of COVID, especially our moms who did not work in the medical system. And then we talked about safety, a lot of issues around whether or not it was safe to go to the grocery store, safe to take a walk, what kinds of activities they could still do together and break up the monotony of the day, especially when we were quarantining very strictly within our homes. And so a lot of that conversation was based around what they could do to keep the girls going and to keep themselves going within the house. And then also addressing a lot of mental health concerns. There's been a lot of changes that have happened in the course of 1 year, and moms having to navigate that conversation with their daughter, it was really important for us to support them with language to help communicate, and also with the ability to make sure that their needs were being addressed too.
That's Atira Griffin, founder and CEO of the mother-daughter relationship program Bond, Building Our Nation's Daughters. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Griffin was recently awarded an Open Society Institute Fellowship to support this work. Part of Bond's mission is encouraging mothers to pursue their career goals. What kind of opportunities are you able to connect them with?
We have been able to connect our moms with opportunities with local partners, so local nonprofits, local institutions. And then recently, we've actually been able to start a partnership with Baltimore Core in talking about what their career force pipeline looks like and how Bond can be a good partner in the work to ensure that single moms are part of that pipeline and have access to those programs that Baltimore Core offers. And so in working with local institutions, we've been able to support our moms not only in careers like going and finding a new job, but also in higher education. And so we've sent two of our moms scholarships for them to continue their education, one for their bachelor's degree and another who was pursuing her master's in health administration. And being able to support moms to do that allows them to increase their salary, increase their income, which will eventually increase their time that they have to spend with their daughters. And, you know, we're just grateful to have such great partners in Baltimore City and also be able to support our moms and daughters in both career and educational endeavors that they want to pursue.
Within Bond, groups focus on a different theme each year. What are some of those themes?
Yes. So the first year is a foundational theme where we really focus on communication and connection. So moms and daughters get to explore where their relationship is at the start of Bond programming, how they are connecting with one another, and learn these key communication skills that we continue to develop throughout programming. The second year, I'm over here smiling. It's really exciting for me. We focus on art. We do all types of art forms, whether it be visual arts, performing arts, and the like. And then we also pair that with financial wellness. And I know a lot of folks listening might be like, art and financial wellness? Well, we want to use both sides of the brain, one. So we're activating both sides of the brain with these two subject areas. And we're also taking the time to educate moms and daughters in a two-generation model about financial wellness. And this really breaks down the barriers of those generational knowledge gaps when it comes to money, when it comes to economics, and helps them build generational wealth and build a plan for what it looks like for their family to succeed and understand finances from here on out. And so I'm really excited about the second year. In our third year, we're going to be exploring leadership. And through leadership, we're going to be talking about speaking, civic engagement, and then we are also going to be working on some STEM activities. So we're going to partner with an organization for some STEM boxes for our moms each month and daughters.
Why is it so important to you to help mothers and daughters build a strong relationship?
I think about the relationship I had with my mom and my grandmother growing up, and they were, in my opinion, still are pivotal to who I am today. I know that the positive relationship, the ability to communicate, the openness, and the love, the unconditional love that I felt from my mother and my grandmother made it so easy for me to continue to explore my identity and who I wanted to be and show up as a woman and a Black woman in today's society. And seeing those bonds not nurtured in a way that I'm used to, in the way that I grew up, and in the way that research says is best for young women and girls, it hurt my heart. And so I had to start bond, and also the community asked for it. And so when the community asks you to start something, you do your best to do it.
And you say some of the, what you saw hurt your heart. Have you seen some of these mother-daughter relationships transform?
Yes. So I think about one pair specifically who came in, and they couldn't even have a conversation without arguing. It was tough. It was tough to see this wall, this invisible wall up between a mother and a daughter who both really wanted to connect and know each other very well, but just had so much pain, so much history that they had gone through in their household and didn't know how to communicate about it. And seeing how their relationship has transformed over the course of a year of being in bond, of talking to one another and learning how to use the practices of journaling and meditation and visualization and restorative circle, along with the sessions and the activities that we do, has shown me even more why this program is important and how deep the skills that we teach run to help connect generations.
What will this OSI fellowship allow you to do, and what will it mean for Bond's future?
First, this fellowship will allow me to spend more time on Bond. You know, being an entrepreneur, you are always running on all four cylinders and you have multiple coals in the fire. But this allows me to be laser focused on Bond and grow and develop its foundation to ensure that we are sustained well for expansion. And so we'll really be focusing on like procedures, shoring up our curriculum. And I will really be making sure that we have the right staff in place, whether they be interns or volunteers or part-time staff, to support the growth and development of Bond, because there are calls for us to come to other cities. But before we do that, we want to make sure our roots are deep, our roots are strong in Baltimore. And so this fellowship really allows me to do that. And it also, Open Society Institute Baltimore is a great community. And I'm so grateful to be a part of it. Like, we've already had folks reach out to partner with us for programming for Bond. And just to know that, you know, we've been received with open arms in the community, and there are other partners in the city doing great work who are OSI fellows that we can go to, we can learn from, and we can ensure that our moms and daughters have access to that programming. That just opens the floodgates for Bond. So I'm forever grateful for this.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks for telling us about it.
No problem.
Atira Griffin, newly appointed to the Baltimore City Board of School Commissioners, is the founder and CEO of Bond, Building Our Nation's Daughters. She is a 2020 OSI Baltimore Community Fellow. We need to take a short break now on the record. This is WYPR. When we're back, mentoring teens in East Baltimore and sparking their entrepreneurial spirit. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A football coach, a music teacher, an older brother or sister, we all need someone to look up to, a role model who can offer advice and encouragement. A project in East Baltimore aims to mentor young men and spark their interest in entrepreneurship and finance. We're revisiting our conversation with Wayne Page, its creator. Page is one of two youth activist community fellows selected last year by the Open Society Institute Baltimore. OSI awarded a dozen fellowships, and each fellow receives $60,000 over 18 months to support local projects designed to address problems in Baltimore's underserved communities. I asked Page what the Beautiful Baltimore Project in East Baltimore is about.
The goal of the Beautiful Baltimore Project is to provide youth with entrepreneurship opportunities while learning the basics of financial literacy. I plan to help youth gain financial freedom by developing skills to help them earn money on their own and invest in the stock market while building long-term portfolios.
And you'll be doing that how?
Youth involved in the program will have access to educational resources, will be provided avenues of creative expression, and will participate in various social activities. So this summer, I had a group of young men who I was paying every Saturday to clean up the community, because that was one thing that was kind of like a shortfall, like after the pandemic hit, you know, as far as street sweeping and trash pickup and things like that. So we began, you know, gathering kids every Saturday, and they were making $50 every Saturday over 18 weeks. Yeah, we started in about August, and we just ended December 5th. So now we're kind of preparing for the new year.
And there's also a car wash involved in this?
Yes. We had on Saturdays and Sundays also. So after we would finish the cleanup in the mornings, we would have a car wash with Green Alexis, and four of our youth would participate in the car wash on Saturday and Sunday. And they were raking in between $50 and $100 each, you know, every day washing cars.
The young men who are involved, they're mostly from the McElderry Park neighborhood in East Baltimore, correct?
Yes.
Tell us about them.
They're a group of bright kids. All of them have their own individual personalities. All of them have their own special talents, whether it be, you know, computers. One kid wants to go to MIT. You know, we have kids who are, you know, phenomenal athletes. We have kids who are musicians, and we have kids who are interested in art. But at the end of the day, all of them have at least two things in common. They all like to make money, and they all love video games. So that's like a common thing in most of the youth.
How old are these kids?
So they are between 10 and 17.
Where does this idea come from?
Way back when I was a kid, I pretty much started and participated in a program of the same nature. In my neighborhood, we started a basketball team. This was back in like 2001, 2002, and it was called the Little Dogs. And it was kind of a playoff of a team that my father had, and he ended up being the coach of our team. And it ended up growing into a whole league of four teams. And we held games at Patterson Park, and that grew and developed into us doing community cleanups, feeding the homeless, going on trips to Wizards games. And that just was like a highlight of a lot of the kids and you know, my neighborhood, my elementary school's life, you know, and that just created just lifelong bonds between all of us. And it just was something that I know that helped a lot of us, you know, avoid a lot of the pitfalls of, you know, the city and of the neighborhood. And this was something that I always wanted to continue and always wanted to recreate. And aside from that, it was something that my basketball coach in high school, Coach Holly, he always told me that this was like these type of things were the things that I was going to be doing. He always just saw me as a leader and someone who could just do great things for, you know, my community. And just over the years, you know, little by little, like, I've always just been that person to try to do those things. And after college, once I returned to Baltimore, like, I kind of just, you know, jumped right into doing a lot of community work, nonprofit work, you know, mentoring, helping with different programs. It all just kind of developed into this.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Wayne Page, who was recently selected an OSI Youth Activist Community Fellow. The fellowship will support his efforts to expand his mentoring program, the Beautiful Baltimore Project. What are some of the challenges that young men face in East Baltimore?
The number one may be, just staying out of trouble, staying focused, finding the means of making money, you know, without getting in trouble. And I'm just, it's a lot of distractions in our city, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of potential and there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of resources and there's a lot of things that, you know, these kids are interested in and want to do and can be great at. But, you know, we just got to keep them focused and keep them safe.
You graduated from Howard University with a degree in finance. What's the focus of the financial literacy part of this project?
Just getting kids to understand at an earlier age certain things about, you know, just finance and money and life that I kind of learned, you know, going along the way. I learned in school and learned as a young adult, but I feel as though they would have been critical skills and that they would have been skills that I had the mental capacity to learn, you know, in middle school and high school, you know, such as investing in stocks, learning about real estate, different investment accounts, just basic banking knowledge, things like that that are critical, you know, to life. And I feel as though, you know, kids need to get a head start on, especially kids who come from in low-income neighborhoods, because that knowledge and those skills will be even more critical.
What keeps these kids coming back? I mean, you told us they can make a fair amount of money, but it's something more than that?
I've had relationships with a lot of these kids before, you know, the money aspect and things like that were involved. I went to the same elementary school as these kids. I'm from the same area. So I kind of know a lot of the things that they need, you feel me? Like, I know that they love to be, you know, in sports environments. They love to be in basketball gyms, boxing gyms. So I do whatever, you know, I can to, you know, provide those spaces and opportunities for them. I know that they like to enjoy things like, you know, going to the gaming lounge and things like that. It's not always about making money. It's just about having a space that's like not necessarily school or home to be, or having people who are not necessarily, you know, always your teachers or your parents giving you guidance or showing you something new. They want to feel wanted and welcome certain places. Sometimes it's just about them getting a meal, or like I said, sometimes it's about them getting away from whatever's going on, you know, in their neighborhood or at home and things like that. So just providing those spaces and those opportunities for them to, you know, just to be free and just have a good space of mind. I think that's the biggest thing that they come back for.
How do you see the Beautiful Baltimore Project growing and unfolding? I mean, you've got this great fellowship for 18 months, and then what?
So I see it, like I said, I see continuous relationships with all the youth that are currently in the program. I see it expanding to building capacity to have bringing in more youth. I know, like I said, me and a lot of my mentors and coaches that I came up with through middle school and high school, I still have close relationships with to this day, and they still guide me and give me advice on things that I still need, you know, in my late 20s going into my 30s. And that's what I hope to be for these kids. And I hope this program is able to be continued on by these same youth. I hope they, you know, take ownership of it. I hope to help them build brands and small businesses that they can continue on their own. And I hope to continue to, you know, fund my own initiative, you know, after the 18 months, and also gain support from, you know, other outside entities who see, you know, this program is, you know, something that's beneficial. Hopefully it keeps going.
Wayne Page, good luck with the Beautiful Baltimore Project. Thanks for telling us about it.
Thank you for having me.
Wayne Page is one of the 2020 Youth Activist Community Fellows selected by Open Society Institute Baltimore. At the On the Record page at WIPER.org, you can find more information about the Beautiful Baltimore Project, as well as profiles of other OSI fellows. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Jamila Krempel is digital content director. I'm your host, Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us on the record on WYPR. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!